Yes, sir, we promised you a great
gorgeous George. Here
Freddie Blassie, the maker of
Andre, the Giant.
WrestleMania!
Do I have everybody's attention now?
The Right Hook is a Pantsless Digression production.
Do you like parties?
Yeah.
We can invite all our friends and have soda and pie.
Yeah!
I hope no bad people show up.
Disregard that, Frank. It's a bunch of liberal bullshit.
Been alive, keep talk for the rock still. From the streets to Shanghai, back to Knoxville. Sitting high on the mountain top, holding shop, spreading the good news. Been a lot of false prophets and quick hits. And a lot of un-American bullshit. But the time has come to settle and the devil's gonna make you choose. And just like a cold wind blowing, can you feel me coming to you? Just like a freight train rolling back tight, full of rhythm and blues.
Okay, forget the pleasantries. I want to get right to the show. Of course, you're listening to The Right Hook, broadcasting live from AltCon East. And now, with 50% more SFC, sucker-free conservatism, I, of course, am your host, the Rated R Republican, and a voice for the voiceless. Long Island's own John Brodigan, doing it loud, doing it proud, and doing it just because I owe it to the people. And speaking of owing it to the people, when I say that, and I tell you that I do, I'm talking about shows like this. Last week, the House GOP announced the first 15 people who are part of their Congressional Young Guns program. Basically, the younger people who are running for Congress. Never mind that Dick Lugar crap, but this is the actual Young Guns. We're in Congress. It judges their fundraising ability, their ability to win, the chance of victory, and how good candidates they are. Two of the 15 are running for Congress in New York. Two of the 15 who are running for Congress in New York are on the show tonight. We'll be talking to Randy Altschuler, who's running in the New York 1. And we'll also be talking to Matt Doheny, who's running in the newly formed New York 21. But before we get to the two of them, gentlemen running in the New York 27, the newly redrawn 27, in embroiled in the middle of a really, really tough primary. We thought the primary was going to be the one to watch. They're not disappointing. Making his return to the show from Western New York in the New York 27.
The kids are back! The kids are back! Oh, watch out! The kids are back!
David Bellavia, welcome back to The Right Hook.
Hey, thank you for having me back. I appreciate it.
How's Western New York treating you today?
It is fantastic. I am in my vehicle right outside of a constituent's house, and I've been out here for a bunch of hours now, and keep knocking on doors.
Okay. And when once we got done with the redistricting, and it came down to you and the former Erie County Executive Chris Collins in a primary, everyone was saying this is going to be the most hotly contested primary in the state. You guys haven't disappointed. I guess first question, how's the campaign going so far?
It's going fantastic. You know, any time that, every opportunity I've had to, stand up next to my opponent for an endorsement from a committee or a county, I've won 100% of those. When I've had the opportunity to, talk to someone, tell them our message, they're volunteers. They become part of the team. Now, my biggest problem is fundraising. You know, I'm up against a very wealthy man who, no matter what I raise, he can write a check and beat it. So my biggest challenge is fundraising, and I will continue to do my best to make sure that we have enough ammunition to succeed on June 26th.
Okay. So what would you say are the big differences between you and Mr. Collins?
Well, this is a half-hour show, right? I don't know. I mean, look, it's, I think it's just the way we view public service. I think it's our temperament. I think it's our disposition. You know, I really think this is a generational election. I think that, you know, the way I was brought up and the way I was raised, I think we're a little bit more tolerant to the other side. Now, that doesn't mean that we take our conservative values and we compromise them, but I think there's a way that we can work with the other side of the aisle and let them know that this is where we stand, and we're not going to back down from that. And at the same time, that, you know, we can find common ground in other areas that aren't going to go against the grain of our conservative values. But I really think it's quite frankly the biggest difference so far is I want to talk about the issues. You know, I want to talk about things like Medicare. I believe that the Ryan plan is brilliant, and keeping our country solvent by 2040 and starting to pay off the debt is exactly what my children and my grandchildren need. They deserve that. But I really strongly believe that Medicare is something that we have to confront starting with my generation. I don't think that we should put our fathers or our grandfathers in a situation where, because government was poor stewards with their money, that they should have they were taxed for a service, and they were taxed for 40 years for a service. And if we have to make cuts to make sure that that is delivered, we're going to do just that.
Yeah. And what are you hearing from the voters? Because I've really just been following down on Long Island. I'm able to follow the race just whatever blog posts come out, but also through both of your Facebook pages and both your Twitter feeds. And I see a lot from you talking to voters and picking up on some of their issues. With his campaign, I seem to just get press releases when X committee endorses him. As you go on the campaign trail, like what are the voters telling you, or what are you hearing about any differences that they're concerned about?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest issue is of all the people that I talk to, and I'm out every day and I'm knocking on doors and talking to people, going to events. The one thing, believe it or not, that I hear more than anything is, you know, we're proud of the fact that you've weathered the storm against all of these attacks. And the one thing that really, really humbles me is that, you know, I had a group yesterday on Mother's Day tell me, you're acting congressional. And that is the greatest compliment that I've ever received, because I'm not, you know, firing back. We're staying positive. We're not, you know, hitting these people with robocalls and with 85 mailers. We're respecting the constituents enough to give them what we want. I was attacked, from the very beginning. I released 6 years of my income tax returns, and I want the constituents to know that if I'm going to ask for their vote to represent them in the House of Representatives, then it's the least I can do is open up every aspect of my financial life and be completely transparent. And I've asked my opponent to do the same, and like debates, you know, I haven't gotten a response, but I really am amazed at how I've always been told, stay positive, but when you go door after door after door and people say, you know what, you know, I believe in your values, I like you, I like what you stand for, but the thing that really won me over is that you're a conservative who's young, who's staying positive, and we don't have to attack people as conservatives. And we have the positive message. It's the liberals that are negative. It's the Democrats that attack. We need to stay focused, and that's the thing I hear the most.
Yeah. So what would be the benefits of – actually, I should have looked at that at a time. The Democrat is – because I got confused with the redistricting. The Democrat is still Kathy Hochul, right?
Right, right.
Okay. So what would be the benefits of you versus Kathy Hochul as opposed to Chris Collin versus Kathy Hochul?
Well, Representative Hochul is I think, first of all, you cannot – if we think that we're going to defeat Representative Hochul, and the goal is whoever comes out of this election can defeat Representative Hochul – it needs to be someone who's going to have to work. And she's a hard worker, and you're going to have to out-campaign her. And, you know, that's going to be very difficult for, you know, a guy who hasn't left his house since this thing began. Another thing is I just think that I bring a respectable – I know the issues. I'm ready to debate the issues. I will debate Representative Hochul in every town in this district. I have nothing to run away from because I really truly believe that on the issues alone, she is inextricably tied to President Obama. She's connected to President Obama at the hip. And when it comes to issues like Obamacare, when it comes to issues like guns, when it comes to our monetary policy, I mean, forget the fact that we don't want to drill and we don't want to frack and we don't want to build pipelines or any of the offshore necessities that we have to become independent of foreign oil. How about strengthening our dollar? I mean, our dollar is what a barrel of oil is traded on. A strong dollar not only brings the price of oil down, it's also a backdoor tariff on foreign goods. You know, when are we going to address the problem with China? You know, our foreign policy is also our biggest, to me, our domestic policy and our foreign policy intersect. And China is our enemy. When they're dumping products into our markets, they're stealing our jobs, they don't keep a floating currency, they don't respect intellectual property, and oh, by the way, they're aiding and abetting the enemy who's killing our young men and women overseas. So I don't understand why we have this, why we're not being more aggressive, especially through the World Trade Organization with China. I can hit her head on and be respectful of the fact that she has been elected by this district to represent us in Congress. I will defeat her on the issues alone, but I will do so honorably. And I don't think that you can say that with my opponent.
What's your advice? Because I'm sure a lot of young conservatives listening to this would like to go up against, for lack of a better phrase, the quote-unquote GOP machine, which really isn't known for anything other than just do what you're told. And as you see with the attack ads, it may scare off some what could be potential younger candidates who just don't want to go up against that. What's your advice to the young conservative to say, like, you know, screw it, I'm gonna go up and see what happens?
Well, you know, John, I think you can give the same advice because you're doing exactly what – I mean, how many people have told you what you're doing is impossible, you're not going to get a following, people aren't going to listen. It's the same thing in my situation. You literally just have to say, you know, what is more important? To me, these elections are about the – I really believe we're fighting for the soul of the Republican Party, and we're fighting for the soul of conservatism, and we need more Hispanics and Latinos in the conservative movement. We need women. We need to see African-Americans out there. You know, we have to show that our generation is ready to take over our government and to create, you know, to fix the problems that were created by the baby boomer generation. And so I guess the thing is find your support, constantly be visible, and make sure you're building an army every single day, that you have the ground forces that when you come to a vote, whether it's for a school board president or a city council, that you could automatically set up a group of people that say, you know what, if the chairmans aren't going to listen to me, I've got the committees, and I have the members of the party, and they're with me. And every single day you build that coalition, there's nothing they can do if you have the numbers. And that's something I learned only in the last 3 years. And I've been doing this now for 5 long years of getting kicked around. But you got to stay calm. You got to carry on. And you got to realize that at the end of the day, we are the ones that are going to save our country. We're the ones that are going to take these conservative values and say that we're unapologetic. You know, John, we have to be. We're not going to stoop to conquer. We're not going to look at liberals and say, well, I'll give you this social issue, but I feel strong about this. There's a way to treat our opposition with respect and to listen to them and have a honorable discourse. But we have to be unapologetic about what we believe. And I'm telling you, if you're out there and you want to run for local office, do it. Do it. Get in people's faces. Talk to them. Be respectful, but be aggressive and kick that door down.
And if people want to get more information about you, more information about your campaign, find out how to volunteer and get involved, what's the best way to do so?
Please, please get involved and help us out. DavidBellavia.com. It's Bell as in Liberty, Bell, B-E-L-L, A, B as in Victor, I-A, Bellavia.com, DavidBellavia.com. And if you can come on, $5, $10, it really makes a difference. That army of support sends a message that there's a new group, a new generation that's ready to take over, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
David Bellavia, candidate in the – okay, it's the New York 23 now?
27.
Candidate in the New York 27. Good luck out in the campaign trail, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, John, I really appreciate your support. Thank you so much.
That was David Bellavia running in the New York 27. I should probably think to look those things up before I'm interviewing the candidate, but it's the New York 27, the newly formed New York 27, and we'll be right back. Up next is Randy Altshuler, and you're listening to The Right Hook on the mighty FTR Radio.
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
I love teaming with the best. That's why I'm here at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Our research has changed the way the world treats brain tumors, leukemia, and sickle cell. We help kids all across America. Now these kids have hope.
And a sense of humor.
Where'd you get this color?
It's natural.
Give thanks for the healthy kids in your life and give to those who are not. Donate now at stjude.org or shop wherever you see our magnifying glass.
Tired of having feelings? Get rid of those counterproductive emotions of depression, anger, and anxiety. BLI brand medication makes life better. Talk to your doctor today and eliminate all of your problems. BLI brand medication for a better tomorrow.
Welcome back to The Right Hook. You can follow us along on the internet, the interwebs, the interlocking tubes known as cyberspace, at righthookny.com. Also located facebook.com/therighthook and twitter.com/righthookny. And of course, the most easy place to find me is twitter.com/Brodigan, since that's where I do most of my tweeting. Up next, like I said before, the House GOP just announced the first batch of Young Guns. There are 15 of them. Two are from New York. They're both on the show tonight. And up first, coming from out here on Long Island in the New York One, big fan of this guy. He spoke at the town hall meeting I hosted last year. And when he ran against Tim Bishop in 2010, it was the closest race in the country. Hopefully, second time's a charm, making his return to the show. Randy Altshuler, welcome back to The Right Hook.
Thank you so much, Sean. It's a pleasure to be on this morning. Thank you for having me.
It's It's actually funny because I would usually start off by asking the guests, you know, how are things on Long Island today? But I can look out the window and see that it's already overcast. So I'm assuming Suffolk's the same.
You know, it's actually looking like it may be a nice day so far. So it's a little sunnier out here, actually.
So, excuse me. So this is actually, I think, good timing on my part, because when I originally set up this interview, it was really just a matter of you're running for Congress. I'm a conservative podcast. It seemed like the thing to do. But in the past week, you've launched a 12-point job plan and been one of the first 15 people named on the House GOP's Young Guns program. So I guess my first question is, how's the campaign going?
You know, John, the campaign is going great. So, you know, this time I was fortunate enough, a couple of really terrific developments. First, I was endorsed by the Independence Party. So I've been endorsed by the Republican and the Conservative parties. But the Independence Party last time supported Tim Bishop, who got over 7,000 votes on the Independence Party line, but he only beat me last election by 590 votes. So the switch from Tim Bishop to myself is certainly what we consider a game changer. So that was a great development. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has also begun running almost $300,000 of television ads over the next 2 weeks, opposing my opponent Tim Bishop and supporting me, talking really about energy policy. And pointing out that Tim Bishop is and a lot of his colleagues are responsible for the high gas prices we're paying here on Long Island, and talking about some of the policies that I support that help bring down those prices. So that was a great development as well. And then, as you alluded to, the National Republican Congressional Committee announced their first 12 young guns nationwide, folks who achieved that full status, and I was one of those people chosen. Which just shows that the National Party is putting a lot of emphasis on this race, is very enthusiastic that we can win, and will be putting some of their resources behind making that happen. Yeah. And then from a policy perspective, in conjunction with that, we launched a 10-point jobs plan to help foster a better economic environment here in Suffolk County and in the 1st Congressional District.
Yeah, and since the main campaign issue for anyone this year is going to be jobs, like more jobs and more jobs after that, I was curious because I was reading over your 10-step plan, and of course, you know, eliminating Obamacare and trying to find a way to lower energy costs, which would help nationwide, but specifically the Suffolk County ones, like eliminating red tape and, you know, trying to improve the business climate and attract new capital. I live on Long Island too. I mean, you see the for rent signs in the big office buildings, you see the empty storefronts. I know I have a couple friends trying to start breweries, and you know all the red tape they have to go through that. What are some things we could do specifically to make it easier for people to start businesses in the first place?
Yeah, so let's take a step back for a second and just because for some folks, you know, I don't know if jobs seems like it would be important, but they don't really know why. And so let me if I could just before I jump right into that, let me just take a couple of reasons why creating jobs is so important for the whole country. And particularly for the 1st Congressional District. And let me also be clear that it's the private sector that at the end of the day needs to create jobs. Government doesn't create jobs. Private sector creates jobs. And those jobs provide a host of benefits for our community. You know, first, it gives people, you know, gainful employment. It allows them to earn a living, allows them to bring up their families and to spend money in the economy. Consumer spending is a huge portion of our economy, so we want as many folks working so they can bring back and spend back into the economy. And also they help pay taxes that contribute for our government. The second thing is we've got a lot of younger people on Long Island, Eastern Long Island, that when they graduate from college can't come back to Long Island. You know, they went to school here on Long Island, or maybe they went to school away from home, but they can't return or stay on Long Island because they simply don't have the jobs here. And we've seen from 2000 to 2010 a 12% decline in the number of 25 to 34 year olds on Long Island, 25 to 34 year olds on Long Island. And that is a huge, a critical portion of our job force. And the fact that that is decreasing is a very negative sign for us. And then just personally, if you have children or grandchildren, you want to see them living on the island when they can't afford to because there aren't jobs, that's devastating. And then the third thing is if you're a property taxpayer out here, the more business that we can have here, the less you're going to pay in property taxes because businesses help absorb a lot of the costs that get amortized over all of our tax bills. So if it's a bigger tax base and you've got companies that are employing lots of employees, they're going to be soaking up a lot of that taxes that you would have to pay as an individual homeowner normally. So it's great for every element of the community. Talking about Long Island specifically and how we can help small businesses, and I'm an entrepreneur. You know, I've started two American companies from the ground up, and there's a lot of difficulties in starting in a business. You know, you have to raise capital. You have to come up with an idea. It's very hard to get initial customers. So putting aside any barriers or hindrances that the government can put in front of you, just starting a company is tough enough. So first thing I'd say is we want to make that, at least that portion, easy if we can for people and make sure that the government's not being a roadblock here. So unbelievably, between the regulations that you've got in the federal level and the local level, it's very hard to start a business. It's estimated, the Small Business Administration estimates that the cost of compliance with U.S. regulations is $1.75 trillion a year for companies. So that's a huge bill to pay. And in manufacturing, which is, you know, certainly something that everybody wants to see more of in America, that cost can be almost $28,000 a year per employee to comply with the regulations that we've got in the books. And the problem's only getting worse and worse. It's been estimated under the Obama administration, there's been 75 new major regulations, which are costing businesses $40 billion, an astronomical number. And at the same time, while we've seen shocking unemployment nationwide, the regulatory bureaucracy, the folks in Washington that are tasked with making everybody comply with these regulations, has grown 16%. And there's also sort of a neat little thing, it's called the Federal Register, which is the government's compendium of new rules and regulations. In 2010, that was over 80,000 pages long. So that just gives you a perspective that not only is the current cost of complying with regulations just horrendous, but we're making it worse and worse. So we've got that. So one thing that we can do right off the bat is to start cutting through some of that red tape. And there's two levels to that. One level is working across federal, state, and local lines and trying to hold the hand of a business, for lack of a better word, and get through all that stuff. So at the end of the day, the business can get going, so the business can hire employees, so the business can build and create or manufacture a product and service customers. So let's cut through all that regulation, and hopefully as a congressman, that's something I can do. And in fact, to have somebody who's dedicated to helping bring new businesses to Long Island, helping existing businesses grow and cut through all that red tape. The second thing is to push on the government level to stop with these new regulations that are simply killing businesses. And the first thing to do is make a law that any new regulation that's implemented by the government, first we calculate the cost of it. So if we implement this regulation, it's going to cost businesses, and using this as an example, $100 million a year, this particular regulation. Well, then we make that be offset by the reduction of another regulation that has an equal cost. So at the end of the day, it's a net zero cost to businesses, because I think we can all agree that businesses can't afford to pay more in regulatory compliance. I mean, we're at the absolute limit here. We're way over compared to a lot of our competitors internationally. So at the very least, let's stop the bleeding and ensure that no new additional costs get thrown on top of businesses. And then, as you alluded to earlier, we have to start repealing certain legislation like Obamacare, which is just a huge burden on companies, particularly small businesses, which are now very hesitant to hire new employees. We've got to scrap that altogether and look at other examples of legislation which were just too far-reaching and which really don't protect the consumer, but instead just hurt businesses. So you've got the regulatory side. Go ahead, John, sir.
Okay, I was going to say, so, I mean, I think what a lot of people pick up on when they listen to the show, because a lot of the bullet points, obviously, like, you know, I'm a true believer, you're a true believer, and a lot of people listening will agree about, but it's also a matter of having to fight with, you know, the Obama Democrats who want to, like, try and block, like, every jobs plan the House has passed, and who actually add to the regulation, which, you know, can sometimes take years and years to fight. setting aside the laws need to change. How do we make the case where we say, like, you know, that we could actually do ourselves to actually encourage someone to say, you know, something, you know, we've got this great business climate. I understand all the negatives that have started coming to start a business lately, but how do we make the case to convince people? It's tough. I'm going to try to make it easier, but, you know, come here and open a business anyway.
Well, we have so much to offer here on Eastern Long Island. You know, first, we've got great educational institutions. We've got Stony Brook University, just as one example. You've got Brookhaven National Lab, where we've got a lot of high technology business happening. So there's a great workforce or potential workforce here. You know, it's a great workforce already in place, but new and potential employees that are highly educated, and there's some exciting science and technology that's being worked on right here in the First Congressional District. So if you're talking to a new company, say, hey, tap into this great highly educated workforce, and there could be some good technology here that you may want to adapt for your business or you may want to commercialize. So that's great. Second thing is, just a beautiful place to live. I mean, we have wonderful natural attractions here. It's a beautiful place to raise up your family. And with the proximity to the city, you kind of have best of both worlds. You can always go into a large city like New York, but at the same time, you have this beautiful suburban living out here. And then you've got, when you look at the north and the south forks of the First Congressional District, you've got a tremendous farming community, beautiful beaches, great tourist areas. So just wonderful that you wouldn't have in a lot of other areas from a quality of life perspective. So I think we have a lot to sell here to businesses. The key is making sure that they, from a economic perspective, feel welcome as well. And if we can marry that up, we have huge potential. And there are some exciting things happening here, but they could be even more exciting. And, you know, I talk about my plan of trying to become the Silicon Valley of the East, because we do have such a highly educated workforce here and have some developing technologies. So that's really possible, and there's a lot to sell here. You got to kind of put it all together, though.
What are some differences you're seeing, if any, from your 2010 campaign, where I believe you, if not the closest race, you were one of the closest races that we had compared to this year? Because it's one thing I'm curious about seeing in November of this year is that New York, and especially certain pockets of it in the suburbs like Suffolk, Westchester, seem to be getting purpler, but at the same time, we're still a blue state with the president running on the top of the ticket. As you speak to the voters of the district, are you noticing any differences between the two? And do you have to change up your campaign a little bit to, you know, make up for, like, the 3.5 points from 2010?
Sure. So it was the closest race in the country, and it was only 593 votes out of 190, and almost 197,000 cast. So you're talking about not points, you're talking about, you know, what we call basis points, you know, 0.2% or something. So
okay.
So it's a very small gap to make up, but it's also going to be a different election. You hit it right in the head. You've got the president at the top of the ticket. You're going to have a much larger turnout. In my election, it was slightly short of 200,000. In a presidential election, that usually jumps up to 300,000. So a new group of voters who sat it out in the off-year election are now going to come to the polls. So you have to adjust your campaign accordingly. I think there's a lot more positive we have this time, and I thought about the Independence Party, a lot more national support. This race really has become one of the top races in the country, and I think from the Republicans' perspective, it's one that we should be winning. I think in general, though, you know, in Long Island, there has not been that pickup or perceived pickup in the economy that maybe you see elsewhere in New York or even in the country. And housing prices are still depressed. You know, they're still down year over year. There's not a huge influx of new jobs here. Small businesses, which are the foundation of the First Congressional District, they're still getting killed. So if you ask the average person here or voter on Long Island, have things gotten better? I think they'd say they haven't. And if anything, this prolonged recession has just sort of sapping energy out of people. And I think they're very frustrated with an inept government that doesn't seem to know how to get out of its own way, which is spending us into oblivion, and doesn't quite understand really the problem, doesn't get it. And I think they've had enough of that. And, you know, for my campaign to be successful, I need to make sure they understand that Tim Bishop is right part of that problem. I mean, he's been there for 10 years. Since he's been there, you know, almost 40,000 jobs have been lost in the 1st Congressional District. Housing prices are down. Inflation is up. I mean, there's a host of metrics which just show you you're worse off with Tim Bishop as your congressman. We need to make people understand that if you continue to vote for the same person over and over again, you're going to get the same result. I mean, 10 years into it, the guy's not going to be any better than he was 10 years ago. Baseball player doesn't get better mysteriously after 10 years. I was Tim Bishop. And the more that we're successful in pointing that out to voters and also showing them a plan that we could do better, that I can do better. And that was really the impetus behind launching the 10-point jobs plan. Make it concrete, things that actually can get done. It's a plan filled with specific changes. Nothing, you know, it's not filled with highfalutin language like we want to bring jobs back to America. Well, everyone wants to bring jobs back to America. How do you bring them back to America? Well, here's some specific points how to get that done. And it's a very much an approach that a business person would take because that is my background, and I think that's what's lacking in Congress today. And I think people realize that more and more as well, and I think that's a lot of the attraction of Mitt Romney. He's a business guy. And we're sort of tired of having folks like President Obama who have no practical experience, have not worked in the private sector before. And it's not even an ideological thing. If you don't have that skill set, how can you possibly help fix our economy? You can't. Nobody could do that. And the people in Congress are proving that day in, day out. They don't have the skills. They're not able to get the job done. And I think voters are getting that.
I'm actually surprised more people haven't made the baseball player analogy to their opponents because I actually like that. When you see some of these people being reelected over and over and over again, even though they're not getting the job done, it makes you wonder, like, what are the voters expecting?
You know, Mark Teixeira, great baseball player, great first baseman, not much of a stolen base guy. Suddenly, you know, if the Yankees need stolen bases, if suddenly Mark Teixeira, after the years he's been in the league, going to be stealing 30 bases a year, it ain't going to happen. So he's great at what he does. If we want, you know, Tim Bishop knows a lot about education. He worked at Southampton College. You know, if we want to have our congressman spend 100% of his time tinkering around in education, you got the guy. But if you want a congressman who's going to help fix our economy and help the private sector grow so we can create jobs here on Long Island, you got to switch. He just doesn't have the skill set.
And if people want to find out more about you, about the campaign, get involved, what's the best way to go about doing so?
You know, best way to go is to come to our website, which is www.randy2012.com, and it's Randy with a Y. And, you know, there's a form there if you want to volunteer or help out, just to click on it. And we would love your help. We've got hundreds of volunteers from across the 1st Congressional District, young, old, men, women, you know, sort of represents the full spectrum of voters on Eastern Long Island. We have a lot of younger folks, too. You know, people who are still in high school who are volunteering. So if you're in high school and want to get involved during the campaign, particularly during the summer, we'd love to have your help. And it's just an energetic bunch, lots of fun, exciting things to do. And I think we're going to have a great summer and ultimately a great fall.
Well, Randy Altshuler, candidate for Congress in the New York 1, God willing, future congressman in the New York 1. Thank you for joining us on the show. Good luck out in the campaign trail, and we'll talk to you soon.
John, thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to coming back and reporting from Congress.
And we'll be right back. You are listening again to the Mighty. I always screw that up the second time. You're listening to The Right Hook on the Mighty FDR Radio.
Don't want to call you because I miss you too much. Don't want to play because I'm out of luck in this town.
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
When you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Moco Choco, whatever, and the Wacko Latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
Please stare into the center of the movie Shame. I'm so happy to be alive. Everything is going to be fine. Did I take my medication today? Keep working hard to stay alive.
Welcome back to The Right Hook. The tunes you are hearing are from a band called Amber Pacific. I'm not quite sure where they're from, but I caught one of their songs on Pandora a couple years ago, and I've become a fan. So hopefully you'll be a fan too. Our third and final guest is running. This is actually the third time for him, as you'll hear in the interview. He was originally one of the names mentioned during a special election, and he ran for the second time. Last year in the New York 23, he's running in the newly redrawn New York 21 this year, hopefully third time's the charm, and making a return appearance on the show. Matt Doheny, welcome back to The Right Hook.
Hey, great to be here, John. How are you?
Good. How's upstate New York treating you today?
You know, things are great in the North Country. You know, we've gotten through the snow here in mid-May, and so things are looking good.
So we're kind of hoping a third time is a charm with you, because originally you were one of the names thrown in for the special election, where for some reason they went with Didi Scazzafaza. And then the second time you ran last year, but we had that little problem with what's-his-face running on the conservative line. Third time's a charm. You have all three important lines. How's the campaign going so far?
So far, things are going quite well, John. We've, as you mentioned, you know, we have the conservative and independents party lines. You know, we do have a Republican primary on June 26th, so I want people, you know, to not forget that. But again, we won a tough primary, and we feel confident that we'll be able to overcome. And that's a huge difference. As you mentioned, you know, my opponent, Bill Owens, he only got 47.5% of the vote last time. Smallest winning percentage in the entire country, if you can believe that, John. So we've been working hard. We have a new district. You know, we have this is a new 21st congressional district, about 17,000 square miles. So it's about bigger than about 10 states in the union. So we've been out working hard and going around and seeing everybody from Saratoga all the way up to Messina and everywhere in between. So maybe just give you a couple highlights of things that have sort of happened recently. We were endorsed by all 12 Republican county committees here. We have the conservative and independence parties have endorsed us, and we have their lines. So we're quite excited about all that. The United States Chamber of Commerce has already started running ads against Mr. Owens this week. We're a pure toss-up, both from Stu Rothenberg's service as well as the Daily Coast people. So, you know, we're one of those pure toss-up races. And I just was made a full young gun. So there's one of 12 challengers in the entire country that full young gun status, and talked to, you know, Leader Cantor about that. So, you know, we're full speed ahead, and, you know, we're looking forward to a great summer and fall.
So the main campaign issue, regardless of what you're running for this year, is jobs, the lack of jobs, and how to create more jobs and get people back to work. And I know a lot of our conservative bullet points are like, you know, working on energy, eliminating Obamacare, are usually good in theory, but that also requires us winning arguments and fighting, you know, nonstop with the Democrats. Looking specifically at bringing business and bringing jobs to the North Country, what are some things that that we can do or that's possible to do outside of, you know, the usual congressional battles?
Sure. And so, you know, just to sort of reset here, the new 21st Congressional District is the entire North Country, pretty much the entire Adirondack Mountain area and a chunk of Capitol land. You know, we have northern Saratoga, Glens Falls, Warren, and Washington counties. So, and the reason I say that is because, you know, each area has their own indigenous, you know, economic culture. They all have, you know, different challenges and different parts of the state for that matter. So certainly, you know, there's the challenges that unfortunately every business faces in the country, and even more so here in New York. So, you know, you have my opponent who supports health care. He wants to raise taxes on people who provide capital, who create jobs. You know, he doesn't want to cut regulation. He's in favor of job-killing things from cap and trade all the way to card check. So, you know, he's just wrong on those national policies. In addition, when you think about sort of regional areas, you know, number one, you know, in the Capitol land, we have a large amount of medical device manufacturers. Well, anybody who's studied Obamacare a little bit realizes there's a 2% tax that baked into medical device manufacturers, another job-killing program. Number two, Fort Drum. You know, I'm a staunch supporter of our nation's defense, and partly of that is, you know, the funding. You know, I've talked to Armed Services Chairman Buck McKeon many times about this topic and how Fort Drum is important and crucial to our nation's security and obviously our local economy in the Watertown sort of western part of the North Country. Unfortunately, my opponent wants to continue to cut the defense budget. And then on top of that, when you get into the Adirondacks, you know, we have some basic challenges. Like, number one, you don't have cell phone coverage for heck of a lot of within the park, and you don't have any broadband. And so I will be a staunch advocate to making sure that we actually can get those types of services upgraded to, you know, where someone who has a 12-year-old daughter, you know, wants to live in those areas. And, you know, with capital, and, you know, like, there's a global competition for people, capital, and ideas every day. And people want to live in areas like a Saranac Lake or a Plattsburgh and have to have the opportunity to be able to participate in the global economy. And they can relocate or, you know, not go anywhere in the first place and start their business or whatever their life's activities are. So with that, you need to have those types of basic infrastructure, John, basic infrastructure to allow people to do that. So I mean, those are three quick things that are just more idiosyncratic to the actual areas, aside from the national policies that affect us all so much. But part of it is, you know, like when you have a tough climate like we do here and you have challenges, again, from, you know, Wilton in Saratoga County all the way up to Watertown here in Jefferson County, you got to change the attitude. They want people to, you know, stop being on the sidelines, to actually, you know, take the risk of hiring the new worker. Maybe I'll buy the new piece of farm equipment and add a few more head of cows to milk. Or maybe, you know, I'm going to start that business I've been holding back for and been nervous about. And that's part of, you know, what, you know, you can do from a national level in terms of just saying, you know what, unlike President Obama, it's okay to go out and earn a living. It's okay to make money. It's okay to be an entrepreneur, to be a business person, to be a job creator that we so desperately need up here. Because you know what? The unemployment rate in the North Country in a lot of these counties, we're over 11% up here, John. Think about that.
Wait. I was actually thinking about that for a second. That's insane.
And so when you talk about the national average of 8.1 and, you know, regional averages, you know, certain areas are below. But, you know, when we have Jefferson, Lewis County, St. Lawrence County, you know, double digits over 11%. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here. And so I'll provide a clear contrast to my opponent in terms of, as a business guy, John, who understands what it takes to turn around companies, what understands what it takes to go out and create job opportunities for people. That's what we bring to the district.
That actually leads to something that I'm very curious to see how November plays out demographically in New York, because you mentioned in the North Country, I mean, you guys are 3 points higher than the national average, than the national unemployment rate. And while New York is still, as much as I hate using the color phrase, a blue state, and we're all going to be running with not only President Obama at the top of this ticket, but also a statewide Senate race on the top of the ticket, pockets of it since 2008 have definitely been getting purpler. What's been your feel as you from the district as you speak to the voters and as you campaign throughout the different counties? What's been the feel? Are people starting to, you know, be more receptive to some of our policies that just because of living in New York they dismissed just because they saw the R or the C after the name? Or, you know, what's your take on some of the voters?
Yeah, and again, I mean, I've been out here, you know, for 6 months, you know, on a daily basis here, you know, from voters, people you see, anything, place from Mickey D's to the gas station. And, you know, it's not a political issue when you don't have a job. It's not a political issue where, you know, you stop looking for work. It's not a political issue where you're underemployed, you know, and whether, you know, you stop looking for work, you're getting paid under the table. And so that's really no Democrat or Republican answer. They're like, we just need new solutions. They know it's not coming from President Obama and from our congressmen. And on top of that, you know, in terms of, you know, the district as it's sort of gotten reconfigured, you know, we picked up a lot of capital land, again, Warren, Washington, Saratoga. And, again, those are pretty Republican areas to begin with. So, you know, we have a great opportunity. This district has more registered R's than registered D's than any other district in the state, John. So we have it's a pretty good voting advantage here, at least by registration status. And, again, our job and my opportunity set and challenge is to go out and prove the case of, you know, why, you know, believing in the free market, giving people the opportunity of the opportunity to go out and make a living as opposed to having the government not only tell you what to do but provide everything. And on top of that, to actually, you know, realize that these job-creating policies actually will work. And that's the challenge, and that's a challenge we take seriously and we, you know, live up to every single day.
And if people want to find more information out about you, about the campaign, how they can get involved and volunteer, what's the best way to do so?
We'd love to have people. We're on Facebook, but our website is Doheny, D-O-H-E-N-Y, for Congress, the number 4congress.com. So DoheneyForCongress.com. And, again, you know, we've got a great network going on here. We have, you know, a full team on the ground from, again, Watertown to Plattsburgh, from Sena down to Glens Falls and beyond. And we're out working hard every day, and just to make sure that people understand that this is, you know, one of those districts where, you know, we can, as Republicans, pick up the seat. And, we're, you know, it's going to have a lot of national attention. As I mentioned, the United States Chamber of Commerce is already up on TV and 6 months out. So we're gonna have a spirited battle up here, John.
Yeah. And just because you mentioned the primary, if people want to find out where to vote for the primary.
Right, and again, our district is in 12 counties, and we have northern part of Saratoga, northern part of Herkimer County, and then we have all of Hamilton, Lewis, Jefferson, St. Lawrence, Franklin, Clinton, Essex, Warren, Washington, and Fulton counties, and just go to your standard local Board of Elections site, and they will the polling places are the same as always for the new June 26th primary for the federal races.
Well, Matt Doheny, congressional candidate, New York 21, God willing, future New York congressman in New York 21. Thanks for joining us today. Good luck out in the campaign trail, and we will talk to you soon.
Hey, we appreciate John, and again, look forward to talking to you soon. Take care.
And that's The Right Hook. Thanks to Randy Altshuler, Matt Doheny, and David Bellavia. Next week, it will be the biggest guest we've ever had. I don't want to jinx it because I don't like actually mentioning who it is until I actually have it taped. But if you check out my Twitter feed, hopefully like around 5 o'clock next Tuesday, twitter.com/Brodigan, you can find out who it is. But it's for a little podcast I tape in the basement. It's kind of huge. Thank you for joining us this week. And I'm out. Peace.